Is new music part of the Vermont Opera Project's mission? What is the mission of the Vermont Opera
Our
Project?
mission is to bring new and rarely performed operas to Vermont. So yes, new is very much our mission. Last year we did Orpheus and Eurydice, which is 20 years old. And then this year, the Andrea Expedition, which was written in the 1980s. So we're trying to keep it new. Yes, definitely. And eventually we would do rarely performed, Baroque or something like that if people really wanted us to. But we're starting here.
What did you see as the need for another opera company here in Vermont?
Well, we thought that considering that Opera Company Middlebury does their thing, which is very sort of standard repertoire, and Vermonters are known for being a little, off the beaten path, that new opera would really appeal to them. So, and there's so much new opera out there in the world right now, that it's sort of what even the bigger companies are going to is bringing in these smaller pieces.
And it seems like a lot of new operas are written with very large-scale presentations in mind.
It's interesting. I think that it just depends. I think that there's also a lot of really exciting chamber work that's being created for smaller venues or for one particular singer. So it really runs the spectrum from very large pieces to something as intimate as the Andrea Expedition.
I might follow up on that a little bit. The Andrea Expedition is not technically an opera per se. It was written as a song cycle for one solo baritone. It's 13 songs. And the last time I did it was 10 years ago in recital with a baritone. And I said, we have this wonderful operatic singer, Michael Chioldi, who sings all over the world as a Verdi baritone. He could have just stood by the piano in a tuxedo, and we could have given a nice concert. But Cynthia has this wonderful concept of staging this piece so you get a better handle on the dramatic arc of the situation, which is really moving, and she has a brilliant presentation. So it's turned into an evening of a staged drama. But it's not, I think people wouldn't consider necessarily classify it as an opera per se, but it stretches the boundaries of what an operatic performance is, which I think is a neat idea.
Very cool. Tell us, just give us a high level of what the story is of the piece.
So the Andrea Expedition, three Swedish explorers in 1897, at the height of Arctic exploration, they decided that they should fly a hot air balloon to the North Pole because nobody had been to the North Pole yet. And they were going to do it, and they were going to do it in, I don't know, 6 to 10 days. And they were going to land in San Francisco in tuxedos, and they brought champagne to pop, and they were ready. It was going to be great. And on July 11th, 1897, they flew off amid cheers of everyone and were never seen again. And no one, of course, knew what happened to them until 33 years later, a seal hunting team found their final campsite and their bodies, and of course, along with that were their journals and their letters. And then one of them, Nils Stringerberg, was a photographer and took pictures of the trip, which are amazing. And so that is there. They came home to this huge, big, celebration in Sweden that they were finally brought home. And the song cycle itself, there were many books written about it because it was a huge deal in Sweden. And the song cycle itself is taken largely from their journals and their letters. And it's great. So the three gentlemen, there's Andre, S.A. Andre, Knut Frankel, and Nils Strindberg, and they were all very. Nils Strindberg was engaged to be married. He wrote love letters to his fiancée the entire time. So all of his contributions are these very sort of, until the last one, which breaks your heart, very sort of perky, like, hey, we're walking on polar ice, and look at this great meal I made, and I miss you, and all of these, and then. And then Andre, he writes very much about sort of ambition. And, he was much older than the other gentlemen. He was in his 40s and they were in their 20s. And so he writes a lot about, ambition and how the world is going to remember him. And then Frankel actually, in real life, only ever plotted the stars and took scientific measurements. So he never, there's no journals of him. So that's where Dominic Argento gets to take his real poetic license. And so Frankel is really sort of a narrator. So he goes through and he sort of steers the entire work.
I mean, I guess it's no spoiler that they don't make it.
It's pretty clear at the beginning, yeah. Yeah. Things don't go well.
Things don't go well.
So what is the real, like, you're going into this story knowing that there's no hope of return. So what's the emotional arc there as you realize, okay, I've said goodbye to everyone and everything that I knew? Like, what are the real character journeys that you see?
I think that I keep talking about this piece being a taxonomy of memory, this organization of the way that we remember things. And the dramatic idea for me anyway was the absence of a journal for Knut Frankel. Why did he only write down numbers? And arguably this story took place a full 11 years before Scott and those guys made their way to the North Pole. So there's this question about the uncertain adventurer in all of us. You know, what on earth possesses someone to strap themselves into a rocket and go to the moon? What on earth is it in all of us that wants to go climb the next mountain or figure out what's underneath the ocean? I mean, there's something intrinsically human in that in all of us. And with the absence of Frankel's journals, that for me was the interesting question. And I think that was the question that Argento, the composer, was posing as well. Why didn't he write anything else down? And so in the course of the song cycle, that's really the dramatic question of what happens.
And there are three characters, each of these characters is played by a different person in the opera?
Now, here's what's really cool. They're all done by one singer because it's a memory. Mm-hmm. So Frankel starts the piece off, you know, describing what's going on. And it is, I think, the moment before his death where he finally figures out what on earth, he asks this question, what brought me to the North? This is the question that we all ask ourselves when we find ourselves in over our heads. So that's the question.
Why did I do this again?
Right.
Well, it's a real tour de force for Michael Chialdi as well, and any baritone that takes on this piece, because you are portraying three characters. And we're not doing anything like having him find different voices for the different characters, but each one has their own energy and their own trajectory, and the songs are interspersed, so it bounces between one to the next back and forth. But Cynthia did a very interesting exercise with Michael on the first day and said, I want you to sing just the music of André altogether, just those songs. Now stop. I want to go back and just sing all the music of Strindberg. So you start to get the thread of that character as he develops through the story, and then go back to alternating the songs as they appear in the music. And we came up, I think, with some good character and personality traits for each person without having to do anything like a phony changing the voice or making one sound different than the other. But when you see it on stage, what Cynthia and Michael have put together is a real, you can really differentiate between the energy of the three and their three separate trajectories. It's pretty neat.
So sort of like a one-man show, almost.
It is. Very much.
Mm-hmm. And it's exhausting for him. I mean, he finished yesterday's rehearsal and was dripping
so
in sweat and exhausted, and you know, and it really takes a lot out of it. It's a huge, huge effort for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he sings it just beautifully.
He's such an incredible performer that I think it's extraordinary. You know, the thing I was also going to just mention is that I think that this is an extraordinary first opera for someone who, you know, might be put off by the idea of opera to venture into the waters of this. You know, it's in English with just a tiny bit of Swedish, and it's about an hour long, so it's a great opportunity, I think, to hear a world class singer explore this music in text.
Mm-hmm. I think lest it sound like it's too depressing too, that all it is are these guys wandering around on the ice, it has a really great dramatic arc. One of my favorite moments in the opera is when the balloon takes off, and the music and the excitement of the balloon and the music shows you the crowd cheering below, and Strindberg is telling the story how we took three knives and cut all the ropes away and the balloon rose up into the sky and nobody's ever done this before, and you get so caught up mm-hmm. in the excitement of the journey and the unknown and we're doing this for the first time, and then the balloon gets higher and higher and the music gets softer and softer as the cries of the crowd diminish down below him until he says all of a sudden there's nothing but silence and the music mm-hmm. ceases completely, and you get that feeling of being aloft, or it's almost like when you go out on a sailboat and you cut the motor and suddenly it's just the sail and the open sea and you and mm-hmm. nothing else around you. And Argento does a brilliant job with that. And I think there are moments like that. They have a dinner where they list everything in French. the menu in French for the evening and Chateaubriand and all the wonderful things they're having. And it's a really ebullient moment. So I don't want it to come across like the piece is nothing but depressing music about people getting lost in the polar north. There's some really, there's some really great energetic moments too, which makes you, I think, makes you draw into the characters more so that when the arc reaches its conclusion, you really care about them a lot. And one director I worked with said, if the director has done a good job with what they've put up there, you really are rooting for Romeo and Juliet. At the end of that opera, you still hope that letter's going to get to them. And
that
I think
they'll make it this time.
Maybe
right?
They'll make it this time. You know, I think what Cynthia has done with Michael as well is create that energy, and you care about them so much, even though you know what the final destination is for them, you still really care about them on your journey, and you're carried along with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So when I think of Dominic Argento, I think of music that has a lot to do with space and place. Like, he'll do things with lighting, like turn off the lights in the middle of a piece and have the performers play from memory for periods of time. And that seems to have a lot in common with this idea of a very intense place. You know, you're floating midair, you're on the Arctic ice. So is there anything about his music that especially resonates with this story, besides the fact that he obviously liked it and wrote it? Like, what is it in particular that makes this really ring?
I would say it's a real collaborative effort between the baritone and the piano. It's almost like a duet. The piano is present all the time. His writing encompasses the entire range of the piano in this piece. I mean, all 88 keys are used. I think I counted at one point. From the very bottom to the very, very top, he uses all the extremes. The piano is so evocative of the sound of the Arctic winds. There's a song when Andre has just about at the end of his life and has lost his mind and imagines he's in Venice going down through the canals, and Argento writes a barcarolle, like a gondola song in 6-8, and all of a sudden you're drifting and you lose the Arctic and you're in Italy. There's a song where they discuss how when the ice starts pushing the balloon to the ground, it slams into the ice, bounces back up and slams into the ice again, and the piano has these gigantic percussive chords in the bottom to illustrate that. It's very, very evocative. And there are motifs that go throughout. The Strindberg writes to Anna all the time, and he says, "Dearest Anna," at the beginning of his letter. And we've had fun sort of identifying multiple places where this motif comes back in and trying to bring that out. So it's kind of a thread throughout. His journey is always thinking about her back at home. And every time, every rehearsal, we find more of those little details in there.
There's also a moment, I won't give too much away, where Argento says to play the chord and then just let it disintegrate.
Right. The direction, I should have brought my music with me, but the direction says hold the chord until all the audible sound has completely gone away, and then hold it longer. You know, he's going for specific effects. And that's been my experience with other Argento pieces. And he's very, very tone painting. He uses a lot of cluster chords in this, where you'll build one note and stack another note on top and another on top of that, and sort of grows the tension with that. They're very, very distinct compositional techniques.
It's also really beautiful. You know, that so I think so many times people think, oh God, 20th century classical music is, you know, it's not beautiful. But this is elegant, extraordinarily lovely.
There's tonality,
music,
but his own language at the same time.
Yes, yes.
But when he moves to places of comfort, feelings of home, speaking about Anna back at home, or even we built a house out of ice and we called it home, and he finds sort of keys on a flat major key, like C flat major, E flat major, B flat major, that are kind of soothing, like putting on sort of a warm blanket in the Arctic winds, you know.
Right.
Huh. Cool.
It's neat.
What are plans for the future for the Vermont Opera
You know,
Project?
Right now, I don't know. we're going through this one, and we're still growing. I mean, the Orpheus and Eurydice was a song cycle as well with clarinet and soprano, and we did have the Vermont Symphony Orchestra. We had a quintet and went Laurie on piano. And then we chose this piece because it was small as well. So we're trying to grow and trying to get to the point where we can move beyond song cycles, maybe, and do a bigger piece. And we're trying to pick, I had a piece picked out called Penny by Douglas Pugh, which is about a young woman who has autism and sort of addresses the concerns of what do we do with adult children or adults, young adults who are autistic or unable to take care of themselves, and how do we integrate them in society, and when do we give them their own independence? And, you know, it's a wonderful piece, and I still would really like to do that, but we're still sort of figuring out. It's much bigger. It's a 13-piece orchestra and six singers. So that's a lot bigger. So we're just moving toward, you know, fundraising is hard. That's what I have to say. And we're working on sort of, we're hoping to grow this year by doing our performances in Barrie on Friday night and kind of get into that audience there in Barrie and Montpelier, who are opera-loving people who used to go see the Green Mountain Opera Festival, and expand a little bit. But that's, you know, moving into something bigger, but still keeping off the beaten path, you know, I think would be what we're hoping to do. So,
yes, this is definitely adventurous work.
Mm-hmm. It is adventurous. That is for sure.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I so appreciate you guys coming in and talking to us about it today.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks.